I I Hare
One night, Abai had a striking dream, the same dream he had had several times before, during his days as a householder. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati appeared, just as Abai had known him, the tall, scholarly sannyasi, coming directly from the spiritual world, from Krishna's personal entourage. He called to Abai and indicated that he should follow. Repeatedly, he called and motioned. He was asking Abai to take sannyas. Come, he urged, become a sannyasi. Abai woke in a state of wonder. He thought of this instruction as another feature of the original instruction Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati had given him at their first meeting in Calcutta, the same instruction that a spiritual master had later solidified in a letter. Become an English preacher and spread Krishna consciousness throughout the Western world. Sannyas was for that end. Otherwise, why would a spiritual master have asked him to accept it? Abai reasoned that his spiritual master was saying, now take sannyas, and you will actually be able to accomplish this mission. Formerly, the time was not right. Abai deliberated cautiously. By accepting sannyas, a Vaishnava dedicates his body, mind, and words totally to the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, renouncing all other engagements. He was doing that already. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati had offered sannyas to his leading disciples so that they could continue his mission. They hadn't done it. Preaching in the West had proved perilous even for Gaudiya Math's most recognized sannyasis. How could he, a mere householder, presume he could succeed where the others had failed? He was hesitant. The helpless, incapable feeling he had experienced in his Viraha Astika was there, but now his spiritual master was beckoning him. Over all other considerations, even over natural humility. Now, although he was elderly and alone, the desire to preach, just as the spiritual master had preached, remained within him. A fierce, though sometimes quietly expressed, determination. The Vedic standard and the example set by the previous acharyas was that if one wanted to lead a preaching movement, sannyas was required. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta had taken sannyas to facilitate his missionary work. Lord Chaitanya had taken sannyas to further the Sankirtan movement. Of course, Lord Chaitanya was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but when his young students had been disrespectful towards him, treating him as an ordinary man, he had taken sannyas. Because a sannyasi is automatically respected. Lord Chaitanya's acceptance of sannyas was a calculated tactic. As soon as he began traveling throughout India as a sannyasi, he immediately attracted thousands of followers to the Sankirtan movement. Knowing that many cheaters would accept the saffron dress and abuse the respect given to sannyasis, Lord Chaitanya had advised against accepting sannyas in the age of Kali. He knew that cheaters in the guise of sadhus would act immorally, accumulate funds for their own sense gratification, and make many followers simply to enhance their own prestige. Posing as swamis, they would cheat the public, because the people in Kali Yuga are unable to follow the rules and regulations of sannyas. Lord Chaitanya had recommended that they simply chant Hare Krishna. However, if a person could actually follow the rules, and especially if he had to spread the Sankirtan movement, sannyas was necessary. Abhay first had to approach one of his godbrothers for permission. He decided to turn to Bhaktivilas Tirtha Maharaj, formerly Kunjabihari. Bhaktivilas Tirtha Kunjabihari, he's the one that went into the courts with litigation and got actually control of all the mats by legal means, but nobody cared like that. The leader of the Chaitanya Mat in Calcutta, Abhay still thought of the Chaitanya Mat of the headquarters of his spiritual master's mission. During the heated legal disputes, the Chaitanya Mat had been the most prized acquisition, and since 1948, it had been under the legal ownership of Bhaktivilas Tirtha Maharaj. Now, although each sannyasi had his own place or places, the Chaitanya Mat and Bhaktivilas Tirtha Maharaj legally represented the Gaudiya Mat entity. Abhay felt that if he were to take sannyas and go preach in America, he should give the Chaitanya Mat the first opportunity to support his work. In April 1959, Abhay wrote to Tirtha Maharaj, inquiring about sannyas as well as about the Chaitanya Mat's printing of some of his manuscripts. And since no one was going abroad, he volunteered to do so on behalf of the Chaitanya Mat. Bhaktivilas Tirtha Maharaj replied that Abhay should first join the Chaitanya Mat. He mentioned the strife that still lingered. Those who are acting against the Chaitanya Mat, they are motivated by their individual ambitions. Anyone who is against the Chaitanya Mat, he said, who is acting illogically and against the instructions of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. So, according to Tirtha Maharaj, the thing for Abhay to do, the thing he had neglected to do for so many years, was join the Chaitanya Mat and act under his direction. Tirtha Maharaj mentioned several members of the Chaitanya Mat who had recently accepted the sannyas order, and he said that Abhay could also become one in time. He invited Abhay to come reside at the Chaitanya Mat. The houses that we have there are rooms that are airy and well lit. We will treat you exclusively. There won't be any difficulty. We will take care that no inconveniences are caused. But as for printing books, then the letter says, we are eagerly awaiting to print the books like Satsandarbha, Vedanta, based on devotional service, and many other rare books by the Goswamis. First we will print them. Books written by you will be checked by the editorial staff, and if the funds can be raised, then they can be printed according to priority. The books will be printed only if they are favorable for the service of the Chaitanya Mat. Therefore, if the fund is raised, then there is a plan to go abroad as well. Abhay was not encouraged. The main difficulty he felt was the Chaitanya Mat shortage of funds. Srila Prabhupada. I was working with my broken typewriter. I went to our Tirtha Maharaj. You give me a room and print my books. Give me some money, I will join you. I had thought, this is Guru Maharaj's institution. He did not say no, but the printing of books was a difficult task for him. He had no money. He was hardly collecting for maintaining. Printing of books is a big job, and there is no guarantee of sale. Without printing books and going to the West, sannyas did not have meaning for Abhay, and who knew when Tirtha Maharaj would sanction his taking sannyas. There was no point in going to Calcutta just to reside in an airy, well-lit room that he had already in Vrindavan. Abhay wrote back to Tirtha Maharaj, mentioning his direct order from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta to preach in the English-speaking people. He wanted to go to the West right away, and he had thought that Chaitanya Mat would welcome his offer. Both Abhay and Tirtha Maharaj had their responsibilities, but perhaps they could work together to carry out the desire of the spiritual master. Abhay asked Tirtha Maharaj to reconsider. On May 7th, 1959, Bhaktivilas Tirtha wrote back from the letter. My suggestion is don't make any hasty decisions. For the time being, you stay with us and engage yourself in the service of the society, and then accept Tridanda, sannyas. The purpose of accepting Tridanda is to serve the society. If that is your desire, then Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu will decide about your going to America to preach and make all the arrangements. It can never be the principle of the society to let one act according to his individual attempt or desire. The society will decide after consulting with the heads what is to be done by whom. This is what I want to say. First of all, it is necessary to identify oneself with the society. In order to preach in America or in other foreign countries, it is important to have a dignified organization in the background. And secondly, it is necessary to establish oneself in India before going to preach in the foreign countries. Now it is that there are no conferences or meetings in the West as before. Communication is done through the media of television. Abhay could understand the needs and priorities of the Chaitanya Mat, but he could not allow them to overrule what he considered the highest mandate, preaching as Srila Bhakti Saranta Saraswati had ordered. Abhay had offered his services to the leaders of the Chaitanya Mat, thinking they might also see things his way. He thought that with the world's crying need for Krishna consciousness staring them in the face, they might see that this Abhay Babu was convinced and enthusiastic, and he should be sent right away with whatever he required. But they had other priorities. Abhay next turned to Kesha Maharaj in Mathura, and Kesha Maharaj told Abhay to take sannyas immediately. After corresponding with Tirtha Maharaj, Abhay had felt some uncertainty about accepting sannyas, and now he was being encouraged so strongly. He resisted, but Kesha Maharaj was insistent. Srila Prabhupada, I was sitting alone in Vrindavan, writing. My godbrother insisted to me, Bhaktivedanta Prabhu, you must do it. Without accepting the renounced order of life, no one can become a preacher. So he insisted. Not he insisted. Practically, my spiritual master insisted. He wanted me to become a preacher. So he forced me through this godbrother. You accept. So unwillingly, I accepted. Keshavji Gaudiya Math was located in the midst of one of Mathura's downtown bazaars. Its main entrance and arched doorway led into a courtyard open to the sky through a metal grating above. The architecture was similar to that of the Vamsi Gopalji temple. Because in the Vastu Shastras, then buildings generally had a courtyard. That way that there'd be light inside and the air would move. Also, especially if it's many stories, then the movement of air, all the hot air will go from the ground floor up because it acts like a big chimney. So the place stays very nice and cool, and then it's well lit and all that. So previously, all houses, buildings, even you look back, you go back some hundreds of years, even in Europe, then they all have courtyards. So it was standard because you can only make a house so big. So like that. So then that was the method that was being used. Right. And then they always have bars on the top. Why is that?
For monkeys not to go in?
For monkeys, yes. Do the monkeys wear green chudders, do you think? You're not sure. Okay.
I think they wear red ones.
They wear red ones. I see. I see. So they changed. They figured out that we figured out who they were with the green ones, so they switched to red. Yes.
Maybe their monkeys might have stolen some green chudders.
They might have stolen some green chudders also. Yes. Could be that they wear both, the red ones or green ones. Yes. The atmosphere was secluded, as in a monastery. Abhay was a familiar, welcome figure here. He had lived here, written and studied in the library here, edited the Gaudiya Patrika, and donated the deity of Lord Chaitanya, who stood on the altar beside the deities of Radha and Krishna, Sri Sri Radha Vinoda Viharaji. But his visit during September of 1959 was not an ordinary one. He entered the Mat dressed in white, Abai Babu, but he soon would be leaving dressed in saffron, a Swami. Abai had been living as a renunciate for 9 years. There was no need for him to observe a ceremony or to proclaim himself a sadhu by changing to saffron dress. But it was the parampara system that a man take Tridandi sannyas at the end of his life. He was aware of the cheating sannyasis, even in Vrindavan. He had seen so-called sadhus who did not preach, but simply spent their days hunting for chapatis. Hunting the elusive chapati. Some swamis of Vrindavan even indulged illicitly in what they had supposedly come here to reject, sex life. Such persons were making a mockery of sannyas. And there were the caste Goswamis also, who lived like ordinary sannyasis, running temples as a business to support their families and accepting honor and donations from the public on the false basis of birth. Abai knew of these abuses of sannyas, but he also knew the real purpose of sannyas. Sannyas was for preaching. So there's also this caste Goswamis. These were the ones who, because the six Goswamis didn't have any families or children, so the temples they established, they then had pujaris, you know, that they would take care of their deities, you know, in Govindaji and Madan Mohan and that. So those grihastha, those pujaris, their children, then that became this Goswami line, right? Because they did the worship in these temples. So then it came like this, by birth, then they're, you know, supposedly qualified and they do all the worship. But as Prabhupada pointed out, much of the time it's that they're doing it for taking care of the family. It's just a family business, right? On the morning of September 17th, 1959, in the 50 by 25 foot deity room on the second floor of the Keshavji temple, a group of devotees sat before the deities of Radha Krishna and Lord Chaitanya. The deities were colorfully dressed in royal clothing and silver crowns. Radharani's right hand faced palm forward in benediction for the worshiper. At her side, her left hand held a flower for Krishna. Krishna stood like a dancer, placing his right leg in a casual tiptoe pose before his left, playing his long silver flute, which he held gracefully to his red lips. His long black hair reached down past his shoulders, and the garland of marigolds around his neck reached down to his knees. On his right stood the deity of Lord Chaitanya, his right arm raised, his left arm at his side, his body straight, feet together. He was a soft golden color, and he had large eyes, a well-formed red mouth, and straight black hair, down to his shoulders. One level below the deities were pictures of the spiritual masters in the succession: Jagannath Das Babaji, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Gaurakishore Das Babaji, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, Bhakti Pragyan Keshav Maharaj. Abai sat on a mat of kusa grass beside 90-year-old Sanatana, also to receive sannyas that day. Sitting opposite the two candidates, Narayan Maharaj, Keshav Maharaj's disciple, prepared to conduct the ceremony of mantras and offering of grains and ghee into the fire. Akinchana Krishna Das Babaji, Abai's godbrother, known for his sweet singing, playing mridanga, and sang Vaishnav bhajans. Sitting on a raised asan, His Holiness Keshav Maharaj presided. Since there had been no notices or invitations, only the Mat's few residents attended. Narayan Maharaj chanted the required mantras and then sat back silently while Keshav Maharaj lectured. Then, to everyone's surprise, Keshav Maharaj asked Abai to speak. Abai had not expected this. As he looked around at the gathering of devotees, he understood that the common language was Hindi. Only Keshav Maharaj and a few others spoke English. Yet he knew he must speak in English. After Abai's speech, each initiate received his sannyas danda, the traditional head-high staff made of four bamboo rods, bound together and completely enwrapped in saffron cloth. They were given the sannyas garments, one piece of saffron cloth for a dhoti, one for a top piece, and two strips for underwear. They also received tulsi neck beads and the sannyas mantra. Keshamar said that Abai would now be known as Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj, and that Sanatana would be Muni Maharaj. After the ceremony, the two sannyasis posed for a photo, standing on either side of the sannyas guru, who sat in a chair. Keshamaraj didn't impose any restrictions on Abai. He simply encouraged him to go on preaching. Yet Abai knew that to become A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami did not mean merely that he was giving up family, home, comforts, and business. That he had done 5 years ago, changing from white cloth to saffron cloth, from Abai Babu to Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj, had a special significance. It was the mandate he had required, the irrevocable commitment. Now it was only a matter of time before Bhaktivedanta Swami would travel to the West as Bhaktivedanta Saraswati had ordered, as Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati had ordered. This was Bhaktivedanta Swami's realization of his new sannyas status. The Gaudiya Patrika account of the sannyas initiation included a biographical sketch of Sri Srimad Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj, listing the major events of his life. The article concluded, "Seeing his enthusiasm and ability to write articles in Hindi, English, and Bengali, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj gave him the instructions to take Tridandi sannyas. For nearly 1 year, he had been ready to accept sannyas. In the month of Bhadra, on the day on which Vishrup accepted sannyas, Bhaktivedanta Swami at the Keshavji Gaudiya Math accepted sannyas from the founder of the Vedanta Samiti, Bhakti Pragyan Keshav Maharaj. Seeing him accept his ashram of renunciation, seeing this pastime for accepting the renounced order of life, we have attained great affection and enthusiasm." So this Vishrup Mahotsav, that's also the day that starts the, in the Vedic tradition, starts the beginning of the year for study, right? So that's when the school year starts. So it's the same day. So here's then, he took sannyas. He didn't give any specific restrictions on how he had to be, you know, work there in the mat or do this and that. He just wanted him to preach because he knew that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had asked him to preach in the West. So he was Keshavji Maharaj. He was he and his brother, they were from Kshatriya families, so they were very strong and powerful. So at the time of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, then from the Chaitanya Mat, which is like the last mat up the road, then from there all the way basically down practically to Hulargat, all the land that belonged to the Chaitanya Mat. And so all the land was being, you know, managed by Keshav Maharaj. So at that time, I think he was, I don't know what his name was before, but I'm not sure that he was a sannyasi then. But he would ride around on a white horse, you know, a big white horse, and go around and see all the laborers and see that they're all working nicely and all that. So he was a good organizer, a good manager. Like that. Then later he took, you know, he is sannyasi open, then his mat in Mathura, and then eventually there's a mat here in Navadvip side. So he was always favorable with Srila Prabhupada. Chapter 10. This momentous hour of need. From Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Volume 1. Our capacity of presenting the matter in adequate language, especially a foreign language, will certainly fail, and there will be many literary discrepancies in spite of our honest attempt to present it in the proper way. But we are sure that with all our faults in this connection, the seriousness of the subject matter will be taken into consideration, and the leaders of the society will still accept this on account of its being an honest attempt for glorifying the Almighty Great, so much now badly needed. Prabhupada's making the point is that we're presenting this in English language, so there may be some mistakes in it, but the subject matter itself is so important that Prabhupada is sure that no one will worry about that. Right? They'll be simply looking at this needs to be heard. And so whether the language is nice or not, people will appreciate what's being spoken. Right? Bhaktivedanta Swami, accompanied by some of the Keshav G. Mott's devotees, made a short preaching tour of Agra, Kanpur, Jhansi, and Delhi. But he was soon back in his own place at the Vamsi Gopalji temple. No one called him Abai Babu anymore. Even amongst friends, it was Swamiji or Maharaj. And people often addressed him as Swami Bhaktivedantaji, Swami Maharaj, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. People readily recognized him as a sadhu and offered respect. Yet his basic problems remained. He wanted to write and print, but he had no money. He wanted to broadcast the message of Godhead, but few were willing to listen. Such things hadn't changed by his becoming a Swami. When a librarian advised Bhaktivedanta Swami to write books, they were permanent, whereas newspapers were read once and thrown away. He took it that his spiritual master was speaking through this person. Then an Indian army officer who liked Back to Godhead suggested the same thing. Bhaktivedanta Swami took it as a revelation from his spiritual master. As a dependent servant, constantly meditating on the desires of his transcendental master and seeking his guidance, Bhaktivedanta Swami felt his spiritual master's reciprocal blessings and personal presence. More and more he was feeling confidential contact with Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, and now he was feeling an inspiration to write books. He considered Srimad Bhagavatam because it was the most important and authoritative Vaishnava scripture. Although Bhagavad Gita was the essence of all Vedic knowledge, presented in a brief ABC fashion, Srimad Bhagavatam was elaborate. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati and Bhaktivinoda Thakur had both written Bengali commentaries on the Bhagavatam. In fact, most of the great Vaishnava Acharyas of the past had commented on Srimad Bhagavatam. Lord Chaitanya himself had recommended Srimad Bhagavatam as the spotless Vedic literature. An English translation and commentary for this book could one day change the hearts of the entire world. And if he could publish even a few books, his preachings would be enhanced. He could go abroad with confidence and not appear empty-handed. One day, Gaurachand Goswami, proprietor of the Radha Damodar Temple, approached Bhaktivedanta Swami, inviting him to come live at the Radha Damodar Temple. Being the eternal home of Jiva Goswami and Rupa Goswami, it would be more suitable for his writing and translating. Bhaktivedanta Swami was interested. He had never stopped his regular visits there, and he always felt inspired in the presence of the Samadhi tombs of the great leaders of the Lord Chaitanya's movement, Jiva Goswami and Rupa Goswami. But when he went to look at the two available rooms, he found them in poor repair. They had not been maintained or lived in for many years. Not wanting to miss the opportunity, however, Bhaktivedanta Swami agreed to take the rooms at 5 rupees per month. He estimated that for a little more than 500 rupees, he could have electricity installed and extensive repairs made, and when it was finished, he could move in. Bhaktivedanta Swami saw the invitation as auspicious, and living there would complement his new project of presenting Srimad Bhagavatam in English. Of all Vrindavan's temples, Radha Damodar had the largest collection of original writings of the 6 Goswamis and their followers, more than 2,000 separate manuscripts, many of them 300, some even 400 years old. Bhaktivedanta Swami looked forward to residing there someday, and serving in the company of Srila Rupa Goswami and Srila Jiva Goswami. For now, he would remain at the Vamsi Gopalji temple, and with whatever money he could collect, he would gradually repair the rooms. It was an important maxim of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati that a preacher should go to the cities and not remain in the seclusion of a holy place. So in that spirit, Bhaktivedanta Swami continued commuting to Delhi, even though to him it was a hell, and even though he had no fixed residence there. Often he was taken in by businessmen who felt obliged on the basis of Indian culture. A good man, if he wanted to be favored by God, should accommodate the sadhus and give them meals and a place to stay. But the vision of such pious men was a sentimental Hinduism, and their receptions were artificial. They could not really appreciate Bhaktivedanta Swami's work, and Bhaktivedanta Swami was not of a mind to impose himself upon such hosts. Then he spoke with Mr. Hitsaran Sharma, manager of the Radha Press. In the past, Mr. Sharma had printed flyers and stationery for the League of Devotees, and Bhaktivedanta Swami had stayed in Mr. Sharma's house on occasion. Mr. Sharma introduced Bhaktivedanta Swami to Pandit Sri Krishna Sharma, a caste Brahmin and active religionist, secretary to the century-old Delhi Religious Society, Sri Naval Prem Shabha. Naval. Okay, they go out on boats, or what are they? Or maybe naval praying, because the stem coming out of Garbhodaksha Vishnu's navel, Brahma on the top. Out of sympathy for Bhaktivedanta Swami's literary labors, Krishna Pandit gave him a room at his Radha Krishna temple in the Chippiwada neighborhood of Old Delhi. Now Bhaktivedanta Swami would have a permanent office in Delhi. The train from Mathura would arrive at the Old Delhi station near Chandni Chowk, the broad avenue down which poured a river of workday traffic. Rickshaws, bicycle riders, sometimes a dozen abreast, autos in lesser numbers, men running on foot, pulling heavy carts, and beasts of burden, donkeys, oxen, an occasional camel or elephant, carrying heavy loads and being driven by men with whips in their hands. From the intensely busy Chandni Chowk, Bhaktivedanta Swami would take the short walk to Chippiwada, past the Red Fort, keeping the Gauri Shankar Temple on his left, then proceeding along a side street past the large, imposing Jama Mosque. Near Chippiwada, the streets would become narrow. Chippiwada had been a Muslim neighborhood until the Indian-Pakistan partition of 1947, when thousands of Punjabi Hindus had settled there. Chippiwada was part of a mixed Hindu-Muslim neighborhood, so crowded with people that cars were not allowed to enter the streets. Only ox carts and rickshaws could penetrate the narrow, crowded lanes, and in some areas the lanes were planted with iron posts to keep rickshaws out. Even the bicycle rider would create havoc amongst the densely packed crowders of shoppers and workers who moved along the streets and lanes. Side streets led to other side streets, lanes so narrow that the second floor balconies on opposite sides of the street were only inches apart, practically forming a roof over the street, so that a pedestrian could glimpse only the narrowest patch of sky. Private yards, shops, and alleys became almost indistinguishable from the public thoroughfares. Although most shops bore signs in Hindi with subheadings in English, some bore the curvy scripts of Arabic, and women dressed in black with veiled faces were a common sight. In the heart of this intense city life was the narrow entrance of Krishna Pandit's Radha Krishna temple, with a plaque of the demigod Ganesh and a row of nestling pigeons just above its simple arched door. The temple, with its resident families, retained some of the tenement atmosphere of the neighborhood. Although the temple room was dark, the Radha Krishna deities on the altar were well illuminated. Radharani was the color of cream, and Krishna was black marble and stood about 2 feet tall. He was decorated with dots of fresh sandalwood pulp and a mask of yellow sandalwood on his forehead. Both deities were dressed in silk garments. On the second floor, just above the deity room, was a guest room, Bhaktivedanta Swami's room. Its cement walls and floor were completely bare. Protruding up from the floor was a 3-foot-high concrete pyramid with a spire, indicating that the deities were directly beneath. Bhaktivedanta Swami soon found that his room was not secluded, but was side by side with other residential rooms. Outside the door, a metal grating smaller than in the Vamsi Gopalji temple and Keshavji Mat revealed the small temple courtyard below. From the roof, hardly a single tree could be seen. The view was of tenement rooftops so tightly crowded together that it seemed one could walk from roof to roof all the way to the colossal Jama Masjid. The mosque's 3 large domes, surrounded by smaller minarets, rose high above the ordinary buildings, attracting flocks of pigeons, which perched upon the domes or flew in wheeling patterns in the sky. Krishna Pandit, dressed in a black, lightweight cotton coat, the kind made internationally recognizable by Pandit Nehru, and he had the Nehru hat also. He spoke good English and was garrulous. He was well known and respected within the neighborhood. He saw Bhaktivedanta Swami as God sent, a sadhu for him to take care of and thus prove once again the piety of Hindu culture. He found his new guest likable, a simple, gentle, gracious, and accomplished Vaishnav scholar. Krishna Pandit said he understood the importance of Bhaktivedanta Swami's Sanatana Dharma mission and his need for a Delhi office, and he vowed to supply his guest with whatever he required. Although Bhaktivedanta Swami was reluctant to ask for anything for himself, Krishna Pandit brought in a sitting mat and a low table, placing them before the pyramid. He also brought a mattress. He showed Bhaktivedanta Swami how to operate the room's single light, a bulb and metal shade that hung from a cord that could be raised or lowered by hand. He brought a picture of Radha and Krishna that had been given to his guru by the Maharaj of Jaipur and set it within a niche in the wall. What was a niche? A cave-in. It means like the wall fell over, just caved in.
A gap.
A space, so if you put the picture, it'll fall through the other side.
Or...
There's a space, but there's still a wall behind. Okay? An indentation. So someone like put their finger there, leaned on the wall, and made a hole or something. Yeah, so they build the wall, because the walls are thick, so they build it where there's a little open area inside the wall, right? So you can put pictures or lamps or different things like that. The small and deep, generally it's lamps. If it's not so deep, generally it's for pictures and big like that. Okay, so he brought a picture of Radha Krishna that had been given to his guru by the Maharaj of Jaipur and set it within a niche in the wall, relishing that Bhaktivedanta Swami could gaze upon it with the eyes of a true devotee. Bhaktivedanta Swami had wanted a secure place for writing books before going to the West, and Lord Krishna had provided it. Now he could work either in Vrindavan or in Delhi. Almost immediately he began Back to Godhead again, serializing book excerpts from his previous manuscripts, while at the same time beginning Srimad Bhagavatam. What does that mean, serializing? Excerpts from previous manuscripts. That means you take out excerpts from the manuscripts, roll them up into little balls like that, sugar coat them, and then put them in a bowl and pour milk on it, and then eat them like cereal or something. Yes.
Continuation of what he had written before.
Yes, so it means you have a longer article and then you print part of it each magazine. Like that. So that's a serial. Right, somebody continues on the same thing every day, you know, same thing, same name, what do you call it?
Same thing, same people.
Yes, you know, it's like in the morning, Milk and Moody, right? Same cereal. So it's like that. So. When Krishna Pandit learned of his guest's lone struggles to produce back to Godhead. Time's already up. Okay. I guess we'll end here. Okay, so we'll leave you with thoughts of cereal and other such important considerations.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gauru Premanandi.
Come to school wearing no chatters. And then you make this cat from the Shrek, you make those eyes, and somebody gives you his chatter.
No, what you said.